Well, after having looked at some of the intellectual, ideological factors that are creating the present culture in which we as Christians are called to live, I want to stand back and try to ask, so what is happening to this culture as a culture? And are we, as I suggested earlier, facing a culture making mistakes of moral laxity that will eventually right itself when the good sense of Americans kicks in? Or are we looking at a culture in dire straits, even a culture, as the Apostle Paul would say, given over? And I'm keeping that as an open possibility. One of the studies that is quite shocking is the work of the political scientist Charles Murray. I recommend reading this book, entitled Coming Apart, The Story of White America from 1960 to 2010, Charles Murray. His thesis is not encouraging. See the title of his book, America is Coming Apart. And what he means by that is he examines what was at the basis of our culture during its history, the four principles of cultural success from America's founding, and they are honesty, industry, marriage, and religion, summed up in the term virtue. How is virtue doing in the present society is really what he says. George Washington, in his farewell address, argued that so long as there remain any virtue in the body of the people, then we will never fall into monarchy, oligarchy, aristocracy, or other despotic or oppressive forms. So long as virtue is maintained. Murray, in his scientifically established conclusion, after all kinds of sociological polling and so on, says all is lost. The American project is dead. I'm taking phrases out of this book. The man is not a Christian, but he's looking at America as this social project. And unless a great awakening takes place that rediscovers these founding principles, all is lost. But can we expect this to happen? And if we cannot, indeed, all is lost. For Murray really doesn't look either at the religious side of things. It's only the sort of moral habits of the people. And so doesn't see that there is arising this whole redefinition of human civilization based on the notion that man is God, which is where we really lose a culture. The political philosopher and former president of the Italian Senate, Marcello Pera, has stated the apostasy from Christianity is exposing the entire West to the risk of a grave cultural and political crisis, and perhaps even to the collapse of the civilization. So here you have people from Italy, the sociologist, arguing that our culture is lost. We're indeed seeing the collapse of the old culture, but few of these observers see that actually we're also watching the attempt to recreate a civilization based on totally other principles, based on really the rejection of the notion of the human being made in God's image. And so the moral crusade for sexual egalitarianism, which I think is the tip of the sphere, is running roughshod over the very notion of the image of God. It is indeed the embodiment and sacrament of oneism. Melanie Phillips, who I cited earlier, who talked about the attack on Western civilization, argues indeed that sexuality is the battering ram against the fundamental tenets of Western culture in order to destroy it and replace it with a new type of society altogether. And this revolution is taking place within a single generation. We used to say you're on the wrong side of history. Actually, that means you're on the wrong side with the latest news cycle. Things are happening so much. And the culture is falling apart morally. I read an article which said, most industry watchers say fornication has never been as widely on display on television ever. And you know that. And not just on television, absolutely everywhere. The first essential mark of civilization, says an escapee from Stalinist Russia, Pityrim Sorokin, the first essential mark of civilization requires that men take responsibility for their offspring. How are we doing on that level? Of course, this is all being undermined by this movement for sexual equality. Homosexuality was first presented following the 60s Cultural Revolution as one of the issues of individual civil rights that wouldn't harm anybody. Just let us have our rights. But we've looked at queer theory during these lectures. And gay activist Paula Ettelbrick in 1997 said, being queer is more than sleeping with a person of the same gender. It means transforming the very fabric of our society. And just recently, the federal government appointed Kai Feldblum, a lesbian intellectual, proposed to the Senate as non-controversial by President Obama, to write the ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which will determine how businesses can employ people and what criteria shall be used. And this woman, Kai Feldblum, promised to use the power of the federal government to promote every type of relationship as equal to traditional marriage, including polyamorous relationships, that is, three or more people united in a sexual relationship. Is this a situation where everyone wins with the various positions being respected? Well, you know that a spoonful of deadly poison changes the water supply for everybody. One transgender teenage boy entering the girls' bathrooms with the full support of the school's administration changes the character of bathroom breaks for everybody. It's not just his rights that suddenly get respected, it's that other rights are refused. The reason is that what society allows must become normative in the way we run society. So by redefining marriage as the union of any two people, and eventually we will see this extended to any number of people, the belief in exclusive heterosexual monogamy is repudiated by federal law, and the normativity of pansexuality is affirmed by the highest laws of the land. So, not only is toleration demanded, but also silence. We are required to give implicit agreement that sexuality is indeed multiform and should be open to everybody, including children. And so we see the invasion of the schools. The brainwashing of the next generation is underway. In the subtle introduction, both of Eastern spirituality and of what we call pansexuality. This is really a recruitment technique for the changing of the minds of the next generation of citizens who are sort of forced to believe that any sexuality is okay, you see. It's not that we keep in these little boxes. If you don't accept that, you are actually outside the law. You are discriminating, and that can be punished. So it's not like it was said that just give us our rights and we'll take care of ourselves. It's now the imposition of this worldview on everybody. The European Parliament demanded recently the passage of abortion as a human right, for certain humans anyway, and that children aged 4 to 6 should be informed about early childhood masturbation, same-sex relationships, and respect for those different lifestyles and concepts. Children as low as primary school need, says one activist, need accurate, impartial, non-judgmental information about heterosexuality, homosexuality, and bisexuality. What does non-judgmentalism mean and impartiality but a judgment and a partial statement against heterosexual normativity and a massive affirmation of pansexuality? So nothing is non-judgmental. I was reading a book recently by an Old Testament scholar, John Oswalt, O-S-W-A-L-T, The Bible Among the Myths. He's talking about the ancient world and how the Bible is so different from the pagan myths. And in a section entitled Denial of Boundaries, which is what he says ancient paganism affirmed, he says, the removal of boundaries between realms, human and gods, gods and nature, give rise to the immoral behaviors, occult prostitution, incest, homosexuality of the ancient world, but that they are not an unfortunate aberration or primitive behavior. They are theological statements, necessary expressions of the pagan worldview of which they are part. Isn't that interesting? That study of ancient paganism reveals that these sexual extremist expressions are not simply aberrations, but are essential to the very notion of paganism itself. And what are we seeing today? This denial of boundaries, that is, that things are separate, is going on at an incredible speed. You know, this whole politics of equality, you can give two meanings to that. We all need to have equal rights. And yet that can very quickly become the leveling of all distinctions. And an example that came to me yesterday was in the Oklahoma State Capitol, where the atheists or occultists are demanding that next to the Ten Commandments is placed a statue of Baphomet, who is the Satanist's god, who is a male and female goat. And so you have equality here, you see, which really is an expression of the joining of the opposites. You relativize, actually, with much of this equality, you relativize all notions of morality. And you find yourself, you see, in a totally immoral culture. In the name of the rights of some, you have relativized everything. And you are discriminatory when you affirm your views of things, and you must be silenced. And that's really, I think, where we're going, and you've seen it on numerous occasions in the last few years. I like to call this program the elimination of the binary being two-ness. And I didn't make this up myself. I take the term elimination of the binary from homosexual leaders. Two lesbians wrote an article, "Can we put an end to the gender binary? Because there is no one way a person should be." I found it in a gay Jewish Bible scholar, J. Michelson, God versus Gay, who hails sexual minorities who, in transcending dichotomy, difference, enter the zone of the sacred. So here's a very spiritual understanding of the elimination of the binary as the way forward spiritually. Classic paganism. But this is happening, it seems to me, at all crucial levels of our present society. We have the destruction of the moral binary. You remember what Carl Jung said, thinking of good and evil as absolute opposites is wrong. We need to go for primordial wholeness, where right and wrong are relativized. In terms of epistemology, the theory of knowledge, according to postmodernism, distinctions between true and false must be abandoned as socially constructed illusions. So at the philosophical level, we're getting rid of the binary of true and false. In terms of science, the human is being joyously celebrated as co-creator of the cosmos. The binary of the creator and the creature is being eliminated. We're seeing the elimination of the binary of the distinction between animals and humans. As the TV program Animal Planet says, animals are persons too. And in New York State, Tommy, a 26-year-old chimp, is recognized as a cognitively complex, autonomous, legal person. The binary of animals and humans is going away. In politics, the removal of the political binary, the totalitarian state, says one scholar, aims at obliterating all distinctions between itself and its citizenry, controlling every aspect of organized life. As somebody said, a left-wing person recently, your children belong to us. Isn't that interesting? That's where our politics wants to take us. Removal of the religious binary, we have seen it in previous lectures, where the non-dogmatic spirituality of Hinduism is fiercely defended, and the notion of Advaita, not two, is proposed as the spiritual way forward. The destruction of the binary in spirituality between us and God is collapsed, and the future is non-dual, Advaita. Thus we find the proposing of yoga in the schools and Buddhist mindfulness as ways of suppling up the culture to open its mind to this non-dual way of thinking. In theology, of course, liberalism has always tried to eliminate the binary view of God. Ex-Bishop John Shelby Spong says, theism is dead, God separate from the creation. That's where the Episcopal Church was going. But the emergent church also affirms the work of Diana Butler Bass, I'll talk about her later, as a welcomed spiritual awakening, who, her name is Diana Butler Bass, defines God in less dualistic terms. How do you get less dualistic? I'm not sure. And that praying to God our Mother, the nourishing spirit of Mother Earth, is the future of Christianity. And she is endorsed by a number of emergent church leaders. The binary of Christian uniqueness is being taken away. Mainline Protestant communities are facing the shift towards religious pluralism, the triumph of multiculturalism, of progressive Christianity, where we hear the announcement of the arrival of religionless Christianity, shorn of any creeds and dogmas, any notion of the Bible as unique and inspired, but a faith borne along by the breath of undefined spirit. And that the next stage in the Christian faith is interfaith, the spiritual experience of interfaith. In eschatology, we're losing the binary of the ultimate distinction of heaven and hell. Sinners in the hands of an angry God is a joke for the modern mind. Alas, when you get rid of that, though, there is no ultimate justice, no final accountability with regard to real evil. Can you see what that does? Hitler is in heaven. He was not guilty of crimes, but of mistakes. And so the very nature of the judgments that God alone can use are eliminated with the rejection of heaven and hell. Obviously, the rejection of the binary of sexuality and gender leads the dance, as we see the attack upon gender. In Sweden, they now develop gender-neutral pronouns because we can't stand affirming male or female. I mentioned earlier, M and F is disappearing from official documents. A New York Times article in 2012 entitled, "Can a Boy Wear a Skirt to School?" And this was proposed as a forward-looking cohort of the population for whom gender fluidity is a creative playing field. You see, the rising generation has been so brainwashed into thinking that gender distinctions have to go. That's the future. And the theological basis, of course, is the joining of the opposites, which is essential to a pagan worldview of oneism. Our world is very similar to that of Paul's time, and we have to face the reality that perhaps what reigned in Rome is coming back. Isaiah said of apostate Israel, "Justice is turned back, and righteousness stands far away, for truth has stumbled in the public squares, and uprightness cannot enter. Truth is lacking, and he who departs from evil makes himself a prey." The Apostle Paul concludes as he looks at the Roman Empire, "For this reason, God gave them over to dishonorable passions and to a debased mind to do what ought not to be done." Is our culture at this stage, the stage of being given over? Alas, because of the intimidation factor, a number of Christians are tempted to give in. Let's not do that.